Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Happy anniversary, baby! Got you on my mind! Happy anniversary, baby! Got you on my mind!
We're back. It's 12 after, celebrating 7 years on the air, and I appreciate you helping me do that. I appreciate you helping me get here. And I also appreciate our Brain Trust members for all the steadfast support that they've provided to us, to you and to me, over the years. And one of those guys, one of our newer members of our Brain Trust, is Dr. Lance Kirk, who is the author of The Wisdom of Alexander the Great. He's also president of Kirk & Associates, which is a consulting firm specializing in strategic planning and leadership. He's our friend, Dr. Kirk. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me back, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Lance, you talk about in your book, by the way, congratulations on the timing of your book. I think the movie, Alexander the Great's movie, is coming out sometime next week?
Yeah, the 24th, Wednesday.
So that'll be good, the day before Thanksgiving. And your book's been doing great, hasn't it?
It has. It briefly hit number 5.
And that was, what, a couple of days after you were on the show last time?
Shortly thereafter, not too long.
Well, you know, you see the cause and effect there, don't you, Lance?
Of course. You know, I've done some research on your show. I hope your listeners realize how lucky they are.
You can tell them again if you want to. Lance, your book is basically built around the four leadership processes, isn't it?
Right, yeah. Just to remind your audience, I'm an academic by training. I'm a business school professor, not an historian.
And tell us the name of your school.
Pardon?
Tell us the name of
your
school.
Duquesne University, and I'm also an adjunct at Carnegie Mellon, so I'm on two faculties. And just bio background, I'm also a chairman. I have about a quarter of the business school under me.
Right.
So I'm a leader in various capacities, both my consulting practice and the department chair position. Anyway, so in my capacity as academic, I've been studying enactment for something like 20 years, but it's never been popularized for small business owners or big business leaders, or for that matter, just civilians of any type, whether you're raising children or whatnot. And I have been attempting over the decades, actually, to somehow infuse this brilliant insight that is very cryptic in an academic setting into the usable practitioner world. And this is my first attempt at it. I've done some academic research that, of course, nobody reads. But this is the attempt to popularize it. And what I'm discovering...
And democratize it.
Yes. And I really, I've had a lot of people, you know, house husbands and... a lady running a nonprofit have called into various shows that I've been on and said, you know, geez, I read your book, and this is really useful. My sister thinks it's great for raising children. Anyway, so I have been looking at these four processes, reframing, building alliances, identity building, and directing symbols, and finding ways in which this can help all of us. My spiel is that we're all leaders in whatever we do, or we should be leaders in whatever we do. And the four processes of enactment are designed to help people solve their problems, whatever they're doing.
And we're on the last time you were here, we talked about reframing, and this is all couched in the leadership wisdom of Alexander the Great, the things that
right.
he accomplished in his short life as a
leader.
What I've
discovered over the years is that if I go talk to people about, you know, reframe your problems, and I've done a lot of, strategic planning with Fortune 100s and down to little startups, and people look at you and scratch their heads and say, what in the world are you talking about? And
right.
so I started looking for examples that were real concrete that weren't in their industry or something.
People like stories, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a powerful tool to use stories to convey. The fourth process I talk about, symbolism, is a good example of that. It's a powerful tool to convey what you want. So if you're a CEO or a owner or something, you need a good story to tell to convey what you're trying to change in that organization, whether it's a culture change or a strategic plan implementation or a new orientation toward the customer or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that I found that Alexander the Great gave me the fodder by which to leverage these academic concepts. And once I had that framework, then all of a sudden, all my 20 years of reading of Alexander fell very differently. All of a sudden, he looked like a very different kind of leader. Mm-hmm. And once I figured that out, the book wrote itself in 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Well, the second process is building alliances.
Right.
And folks, you've heard me before. My audience, Lance, my audience are rolling their eyes right now because they know what I'm about to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a long time, since about 1998, I've been saying in the 21st century, the three critical components of a small business include these three things: technology, leveraging technology, getting better at networking, and being able to build, understand the importance of, and being able to build strategic alliances. And that's what you're talking about here.
Not only that, Jim, but you may not realize it, but there's some strong empirical literature that supports especially those last two. And after we're off the air, I'll be glad to give you some guidance on where to look for that.
I'd like that.
Stuff on it that you probably already know about, but I'll be glad to.
I'd like that. What did Alexander the Great teach us about building alliances?
Well, let me first explain why I realized it was so important to me. In an early draft of this book, I had alliances subsumed under one of these other processes. And in my consulting practice, I'd hired a man, a nuclear engineer by training. He spent 6 years under the ocean for the Navy, shooting, you know, surface vessels, which they derisively called targets, and. He was, and I had him reading some Alexander and Sun Tzu and some other stuff as part of my training him in strategic planning, and he pointed out to me that basically I was barking up the wrong tree with the Alexander stuff and Sun Tzu. He said, you read Alexander with one word in your mind and see if you don't come around to my way of thinking. Now, when a submariner tells me that, I thought, well, okay, I'll listen to what you're saying. And he said, look at all the alliances that Alexander built. Here is a conqueror, a military man, who was so gifted at building alliances that you could write the book just from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I reread some of my Alexander stuff, and I said, you know, you're absolutely right. And so I pulled out this leadership process of building alliances and made it one of the four main processes of the book, because I think that, you know, there are detractors of Alexander that say, no, he was a horrible conqueror and he butchered people and whatnot. But that's a different cast in the story. Go ahead.
Hold on to that thought. Lance, we're going to take a quick break. First, we'll come back. We're going to get some of those Alexander stories on strategic alliances right after these messages. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Dr. Lance Kirk, the author of The Wisdom of Alexander the Great. And you ain't had enough to eat. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, and we're visiting with Dr. Lance Kirk, the author of The Wisdom of Alexander the Great. We're talking about strategic alliances. And, Lance, you've got a couple of examples of how the great general used strategic alliances to his benefit.
I do. Let's take one that occurred after the battle at the River Hydaspes. Incidentally, that's the longest chapter in the book. It's about 6 or 8 pages, and it's most people say it's the greatest story in the entire history of Alexander, and obviously in a radio show we can't go into that. But after that great battle, when he defeated Porus, the Indian king, Porus was a mahout, which means that he rode an elephant, and he was an extremely tall, gorgeous black man with a full beard, and apparently very, very tall. We don't know because of the conversion from whatnot, but surely over 6 feet, possibly even 7 feet. I mean,
wow.
Listed to be a giant, and he rode, of all things, a beautiful white elephant, and he sat in this elephant watching his entire army be just decimated. So he knew his kingdom was lost, his army was lost, and he turned his elephant with his nobleman, rode away, and Alexander chased him down on horse that would operate around elephants and stopped him and confronted him and said, you know, what shall I do with you? And in translation, what this Indian king general said, Porus said, was, "Treat me as the king I am." And what's significant was the choice of verb. He didn't say king I was. Mm-hmm. You just conquered me. The king I am. And Alexander was so taken with the magnificence of this man and the aplomb with which he responded under this condition that he, on the spot, enlarged his kingdom and left him in charge of the southeast region of the Persian Empire, basically becoming the buffer state between the 100 Indian kingdoms that had been the Persian Empire's problem for 1,000 years and the rest of the Persian Empire. And this man was so taken with Alexander for that magnanimity that he was loyal unto Alexander's designated successor for at least 400 years.
Wow.
The only place in the kingdom where borders remained loyal to the designated successors of the Persian Empire.
Now, well, you know, one of the things that a gesture like that, the point is to be able to make a gesture like that and have it to be responded to that way. A lot of small business owners might be thinking, well, how could I make a gesture like that? Well, mm-hmm. Well, here's how you do it, and this is one of my favorite things to do in the whole world. Lance, and that is whenever I talk to somebody who is clearly a lot more powerful than me, they're in a position, maybe they're, you know, wherever they may be, there's somebody with, pick somebody that's which includes a lot of people. And one of the things I love to do when we're talking is I like to say this to them: what can I do to help you?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it's amazing the response that you get from
yep.
people, like when you say yep. that to them, what
they'll
can I do to help you?
Honestly.
So if you go, folks, if you've got a large company that you're a customer with, and who's one of your customers, or somebody you're trying to do business with, you know, maybe it would be just as simple as saying, "What can I do to help you?"
Very powerful.
And basically, that's kind of what happened with those two gentlemen that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had a consulting client that had a terrible relationship with a distributor, and when I investigated as the outsider, discovered that they had changed the commission structure for sales through the distribution company, and basically they were not pushing my client's product anymore out of anger over this unilateral change that they'd never asked or talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So they stopped doing it, and I suggested, look, that distributor represents 80% of the sales of your product line. You need to fix that relationship. And what we settled on was for the CEO of the client firm to go to the CEO of the distributor, and after a day's talk and sharing of products and test results and whatnot, to slide a check, a blank signed check, across the table and say to the CEO, "I'm going to make this right. You fill in the number." And we had some idea of what the addition of all those commissions over 3 years would have been, and we put that in that bank account. And the CEO looked at that, tore the check in half, and said, "Only making the offer was all I needed."
Yeah,
and those two are now in deep cahoots, and sales have skyrocketed.
Isn't it amazing? You know, it's amazing how many times, you know, when customers come in and they're not happy, we're branching off from strategic alliances to customer care. But it's so appropriate that we say this. So many times, a customer comes in loaded for bear, and all they're looking for is for someone to say, "You know what? I'm sorry you had this problem. What can I do to make it right?"
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And all the defenses come down after that.
That's right. "I'm sorry. How can I help?" It's two powerful statements.
Make an alliance with your customers, folks. Lance, we only got about 30 seconds. Quickly, tell us the quick story about Alexander and his wife.
Well, he had three wives, but the one I'm talking to you about at the break was from Bactria. Her name was Roxanne. Alexander conquered Bactria and basically took the king's daughter as booty, and instead of abusing her, he fell in love with her and married her, and she bore him his only legitimate male heir. And the significance of that relationship, which I'm dying to see how Oliver Stone handles it in his movie, is that they never spoke the same language during their entire marriage.
And so Lance told me that, and I said, what's so different about that than today?
Nothing's changed in 23 years, huh?
Hey, thanks, Lance, for being here. Tell us where the book's available.
Pleasure. Everywhere.
Everywhere. Wherever books are sold, ladies and gentlemen. The book is called The Wisdom of Alexander the Great by Dr. Lance Kirk. Thanks, Lance. See you next time.
Thanks so much.
Quick break. Right back with Mr. Steve Chandler. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.